When you're president, you might get called a liberal. You might get branded a socialist. They might even say you pal around with terrorists. Every president knows when to use his most devastating political weapon.
Brit Hume, do you have a comment to make about Bo?
Bo's not my type of dog. I like the name, but it doesn't seem to fit that little sort of girly little dog.
Let me simply say, as the host of the show, there will be no Bo bashing on this show. We are in the tank to Bo. We can criticize the Obamas, not Bo.
Sometimes political ammunition has a wet nose and adorable fluffy hair. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Monday, April the 13th. I'm Femi Okeh. John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji are away. But don't fear, Todd Zwillick is here. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Femi. Coming up this hour, a look at violence over the weekend in Iraq. We'll also learn some strategies for keeping mentally healthy during stressful times. And we take a look at the agenda for the week ahead, domestic, foreign, and canine. Those stories coming up, but first, these headlines.
It was a happy Easter Sunday for Captain Richard Phillips. He boarded the Navy USS Bainbridge yesterday after being held captive by Somali pirates for days. Once on board, he received a note from his wife, Andrea.
The note said, "Richard, your family loves you. Your family is praying for you. Your family is saving a chocolate Easter egg for you, unless your son eats it first." Well, Mrs. Phillips, keep your son away from those Easter eggs. His dad's headed home.
That's Vice Admiral William Gortney, commander of the U.S. Naval Forces Central Command. He says the Navy decided to use force when they saw a pirate pointing a gun at Captain Phillips, who was being held on an 18-foot lifeboat with his captors. All three pirates were killed. However, many analysts don't expect this rescue to stop pirate attacks. Rear Admiral Richard Gernon.
We should not let the spotlights, the TV cameras, the focus of the world be removed from that problem.
The Justice Department is considering whether to prosecute the one pirate captured during yesterday's rescue. Todd.
Femi, thousands of Thai protesters remain gathered in Bangkok today. More than 70 were injured in clashes with government troops. The protesters supported the ousted prime minister, who was removed from office 4 months ago. Their actions over the weekend forced the current government to cancel a summit meeting of ASEAN, which was held yesterday. Angel Cabrera is the first Argentine to win the Masters Golf Tournament. He pulled off a par at the 18th hole yesterday to beat Kenny Perry and Chad Campbell, who'd been vying for the top spot. It's Cabrera's second major championship win.
Gas prices have climbed almost 10 cents a gallon in the past 3 weeks. That's according to the latest Lomberg survey. And the average price for a gallon of regular is now $2.05. That's still down more than a dollar from this time a year ago. Wall Street was closed on Friday for a holiday. The Dow opened today at 80.83. The S&P kicks off at 8.57. So we're going to have a great conversation with you today on our website and on the air. Who should lead your school? Should it be the superintendent, the school board, the local mayor, or yourself? We want to hear from you. Who should oversee your kids' education? Tell us your take. 877-8MYTAKE. MyTake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Star Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
I'm Todd Zwillick, here with Femi Okeh. We're here for John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji. Well, last week on his first trip to Iraq since becoming president, Barack Obama confirmed his plans to withdraw all U.S. troops from Iraq by the end of 2011. And he warned that the next 18 months would be what he called a critical period in Iraq's history.
It is time for us to transition to the Iraqis. They need to take responsibility for their country and for their sovereignty.
Over the weekend, a roadside bomb killed an American soldier north of Baghdad, and on Friday, five U.S. troops were killed by a suicide bomber in the northern Iraqi city of Mosul, the largest number of U.S. troops to die in a single incident in many, many months. It's a potent reminder that not all is yet benign in Iraq, despite the timetable for American withdrawal. Here to discuss it is David Phillips. He's a former member of the State Department's Future of Iraq Project, who's now at the Atlantic Council, and we're also joined by the BBC's Jim Muir, who is in Baghdad. David, are you there?
Yep. Good morning.
Hi, David. Good morning. Well, casualty counts overall suggest that things are getting better in Iraq, but can we just check in here for a second? Is everything good in Iraq, or are we and the Iraqis out of the woods?
Far from it. What we were able to do is to buy a little time through the surge, but the surge only worked because we bought off the Arab Sunnis by supporting the Brothers of Iraq, and we got the radical Shia groups to stand down, and because the Kurds were able to moderate their demands. Iraqis fundamentally still don't get along, so when we talk about an Iraq that's able to govern itself and be at peace with itself and with its neighbors, there's still a lot of work to do.
All right. Well, Jim, from the BBC, I want to turn to you because this recent attack in Mosul where five U.S. troops were killed, what do you make of this? Is this elements of the insurgency trying to remind the United States and the world that this withdrawal, if we accomplish this withdrawal, will not be easy? Are they sending a message here?
I don't think you can read too much into one individual action. It is part of a pattern up there in Mosul. The insurgency has not really been brought under control there as it has in the same kind of way as it has been much more, shall we say, stifled in Baghdad and in other areas. So to take that one incident and say, is this a message? I don't think that's the right question. There are indications, for example, that it was a bit of a target of opportunity situation where the bomber happened to spot a U.S. patrol that had pulled up into a Iraqi police base, which was the actual target. So in that sense, you could say the bomber just got lucky. However, the insurgency is going on there, so it is part of, it's a reminder that there are still pockets, especially in the area just to the north of Baghdad, Diyala province, and up in Mosul, where partly for local reasons, the insurgency has just not yet been tamed. And there is some suggestion that U.S. troops may have to stay there after the deadline or the supposed deadline at the end of June, when they should, in theory, according to the agreement with the Iraqi government, be out of all Iraqi cities.
So, David Phillips, from what Jim Muir says, that the withdrawal that we're all expecting may not actually be a complete withdrawal. Do you agree with that, that we might, quote, withdraw and wind up leaving behind thousands of U.S. troops in hot pockets like Mosul, in Kirkuk and other places?
Well, President Obama has been clear that we would leave behind a residual force of between 30 and 50,000 U.S. troops. So the goal was never to evacuate and leave the country entirely within the 19-month time frame. If we're going to be able to execute that timetable in any way, shape, or form, we're going to have to be clear with the Arab Sunnis and the Awakening Councils exactly what their role is and where they stand. We're going to have to tamp down sectarian violence, and the government of Iraq has to play a key role in absorbing the Awakening Council members and in being true to their word that, in fact, they are going to work towards a multi-ethnic, pluralist democracy where minority rights are preserved.
Jim, is there any indication that what David Phillips is talking about is happening? How do we know that key elements of the insurgency aren't simply laying in wait, laying low, as it were, for us to draw down enough that there are more targets of opportunity, not just U.S. troops, but members of the Iraqi government, members of the public, and going back to the old violence in Iraq?
Well, there is that suspicion, but the question is whether you are kind of, as it were, drying out the swamp. The insurgency is still there, at least in its remnants. But as David was saying, a key thing happened when the Americans turned around these so-called Sahwa or Awakening Council groups, the Sons of Iraq, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call them, but the former Sunni militias, which were with the insurgency, and then turned against it and teamed up with the Americans and the government. That's a key process which has to be sustained, and it is kind of hanging in the balance. But we've been talking to quite a number of Sahwa leaders in the last few days, following reports that they were disgruntled. They had been delays in getting their pay because the pay situation has been transferred from the Americans to the Iraqi government. There have been some administrative delays. Now they are getting paid. Some have been arrested as well, but other Sahwa leaders say that these guys should have been arrested. They were the rotten apples in the barrel. So from the soundings we've made, they seem to be relatively on course for being withdrawn, for being drawn into the Iraqi security forces, or being given alternative jobs, or at least kept on the payroll until they do get other jobs. It's not absolutely definitive, but it's looking not too bad at the moment.
All right. Well, I want to look forward a bit, and I have a question that I'd like each of you to respond to. And Jim, I'll start with you. The president has made the point over and over again. He did it in the election. He's done it since becoming president, that Iraq was a distraction for the United States from the real war on terror, which is in Afghanistan, and the job that needs to be done in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Well, now, of course, our attention is shifting to Afghanistan in a big way, and so is the White House's attention. Is there a danger of falling into the same trap in reverse, where we get focused on Afghanistan and Pakistan and take our eye off the ball in Iraq before things are squared away in the way we say they need to be? Is there a danger that we're not going to be able to use another metaphor, I'm sorry, walk and chew gum at the same time?
I think that danger is there, that everybody should be alive to it. To me, it's like a kind of, you've got a fulcrum in the middle. Things tilt one way currently towards Afghanistan. So the Americans, the Islamic radicals themselves, Al-Qaeda, they start focusing more on Afghanistan, and both sides start shifting resources in that direction. It's not inconceivable that a year or two down the line, when a lot of effort has been put into so-called defeating the insurgency or whatever you want to call it there, or prosecuting the war on terror, it could shift back here if conditions on the ground in Iraq are allowed just to drift. So I think people in charge are really aware of that danger. They're aware of the need to institutionalize political processes in Iraq. So it's not personalized politics, it's institutional politics. And a lot of work still needs to be done on that front, reconciling the Kurds, for example, in the north with Baghdad. There's a big contradiction there. There's a lot of legislation still held up in parliament, such as the oil and gas law, nation-building legislation, which is still pending.
David, can we turn our attention to Afghanistan in the way the president says we need to, and still take our responsibilities in Iraq seriously and not let things get out of hand as we try to draw down?
And George W. Bush called Iraq the central front in the war on terror. It wasn't so until we made it the central front. It's important to recognize that in both Iraq and Afghanistan, the United States is not going to achieve a so-called victory. At best, we're going to be able to create an end state that's reasonably stable and that can justify the drawdown of U.S. troops. We can do Afghanistan and Iraq at the same time, but we have to stay very cognizant of the fact that the end game in Iraq hasn't been reached, and there's much more work that has to be done there.
There's much more work. Well, Jim Muir from the BBC, the Iraqi Awakening Councils and some trouble there, and you mentioned it before, are we confident that they're bought in enough to the Iraqi government right now that despite the flow of U.S. cash in duffel bags or however else it arrives, that they will remain loyal to our mission in Iraq in whatever way we need them to?
I think what you want to be confident in is not that they're loyal to the U.S. mission in Iraq, but to the Iraqi mission in Iraq, and that is, I think, what they're looking out for. It depends on a lot of factors. At the moment, as I say, the transfer to the Iraqi government is not going badly. It could be better. The Iraqi government itself has got financial problems because of the collapse of oil prices. That is quite a major factor, but they do seem to be keeping them on board in general so far, although they have arrested, as I say, some leaders, and that has caused some ripples. It seems to be going on okay. However, the key thing I'd come back to is this sense of a national platform being built in the center, having a solid political base on which to build the nation. And there's legislation pending. There are differences between Sunnis and Shiites. And, of course, the Kurds are also doing their own thing in the north, and there are tensions there too. If those things go wrong, you could see the Sahwa, the Awakening Councils, Sons of Iraq, call them what you will, coming out again as a Sunni militia championing Sunni causes in a fragmented sectarian situation. That's not what people want to see. And I have to say that, actually, if I can just raise the issue.
Well, Jim,
of
Jim, I'm actually going to have to leave it there because we're coming to the end, if that's all right,
sure.
If you don't mind.
Okay,
Jim, we're from the BBC in Baghdad, and David Phillips, former State Department Future of Iraq Project, who's off to Washington to talk about Iraq at the White House.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.